All right, it is 10 minutes after 9 o'clock. You've got it on KHUM, and our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign resumes for our second week, dealing with the topic of privilege, prejudice, and the violence of otherism. And this time, I have the pleasure of talking to an old friend of mine, Sam Ferguson. How you doing, Sam?
Hey, how you doing, Cliff? How you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. It is great to talk to you on the radio. And actually, the radio is where Sam and I met. Sam and I have both been in radio for a long time. Sam actually doing it longer than me.
don't mention how much longer.
We won't mention your age, but Sam's got a couple years on me, so we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, a few.
Exactly. So anyway, Sam and I have worked in Southern California. We worked in the San Francisco area. And Sam is now a businessman in the San Francisco area. And you've been an entrepreneur your whole life, ever since I've known you. Even when you're doing radio, you were doing entrepreneur stuff.
That's true.
And true. Driving very fancy cars. Always had Porsches and stuff.
Yep.
And you are a car freak.
That's true.
You still are.
But I blame that all on my father, who always had the latest Cadillac. So
there you go. There you go. Now, one thing, we started off this conversation last week with on the topic of white privilege, and I can speak on that, being white. The interesting thing is, it's like you have always dressed nicer than me, driven nicer cars than me, have a really nice house. But you've dealt with some things in your past that have just curled my hair more than yours.
So
you've told me stories about when you're like driving one of your nice cars, getting pulled over by the police for just driving while being black.
Well, I think, what's interesting about this is that you see it from all sides, because, I've had a life where I've been able to kind of live on both sides. I've always lived in kind of racially diverse areas where there's, a certain amount of blacks, certain amount of Hispanics, whites, whatever. So it's always been highly integrated. I've really never lived in, like, an all-black neighborhood for a short period of time. And I've got some stories there, too, when I lived in Watts. But I think that what's interesting about some of the things that happen is, and I'll point out one of those here, is that you run into situations just in, your daily life where people have jumped to about a million conclusions about who you are and what sort of threat you may be. And that becomes really problematic, because I think one of the things I see in my sort of point of view from where I'm at is that these ideas or these conclusions are drawn, and then the reactions are all drawn from there. In other words, I assume you're this, I assume you're that, so you'll probably do this, or you have probably done that. And I'll give you an example of one where I was, I'm black. I had a white girlfriend at the time who I'd been dating for years and years and years, Doris. And we had just moved to Los Angeles from living in South Dakota. I'd taken a position with a major radio station there in Los Angeles. And we were just settling in, and we were enchanted by Southern California. So we went down to Malibu, because we knew that's where all the movie stars live.
Sure.
What it's like where the movie stars are. And that was just like pretty much anybody would. And we're going down, and time we were driving, I think it was a 1966 Chevy old hippie van, beautiful.
Okay.
It was gorgeous, had all the toys, as you know, all the latest stuff.
Of course.
And so we're driving along and just making a normal turn, and all of a sudden I see the flashes in the back, and this policeman pulls me over, says, you just crossed the bicycle lane to get to make this turn. And I said, oh, really? Well, I'm sorry. He says, that's illegal if you cross a bicycle lane, because there's people, that could be in the bicycle lane. I'm thinking, well, it's pretty much impossible not to cross the bicycle lane to make the turn, because, they're going to intersect.
You have to cross a bicycle lane to make
a
turn.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I'm a cyclist, and I understand that.
Yeah, exactly. So after some time, this officer was really, really, really kind of edgy and kind of nervous or whatever. And he says, "Well, you know, what are you doing in this area?" And I'm thinking, "What a crazy question! What do you mean, what am I doing in this area?"
Right.
You know, I'm enjoying the view and looking at houses and going around like anyone else. And we weren't doing anything suspicious and didn't look suspicious either. But anyway, so he kept questioning, going back and forth. Next thing you know, there was another officer behind him and then another officer behind him. He says, "Would you mind if we looked in the back of your van?" So not a problem. So they look in the back of our van, and we still had some items from when we were moving in the back of the van,
sure.
Chairs, whatever, and such stuff. He says, "Where'd you get all this stuff?" "So this is stuff we just moved to town. We're from South Dakota." Da, 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 da. You know, showed him my old license. You know, my license, you know, which was from South Dakota.
Sure.
And all that sort of thing. He says, "Well, you know, we've had some problems with break-ins around here, or whatever, and we don't know where all this stuff is from. We're going to need to check you out." And next thing you know, it says, "We need to get out of the car." They pulled all the officers had their guns out.
They had their guns out?
Yeah, guns out.
Wow.
Out of the car. Yeah, so, I mean, this is the type of thing, you know, it ended up where it all turned out to be nothing in the end, but it was intense and scary. I mean, you could be dead. I had another incident where I owned a, got on radio for a short period of time. I opened a chain of record stores in Laguna Beach, California, and I was coming out of one of my stores. It was during the holiday season, and I had probably at the time $15,000 on me from store receipt. And so I'm getting into my Porsche, and I'm getting in that, and all of a sudden I see this big gun pointed at me.
Whoa!
On the left side of my face. He says, "Get out of the car, put your hands up." And it was a police officer from Mill Valley Police Officer, and he says, I said, "For what?" You know, he says, "Oh, yeah." He says, "Just put your hands up. Don't ask any questions." And we went through this whole sort of rigmarole. All of a sudden, this other guy runs over, a private citizen, says, "I told you a dark-skinned black guy, not a light-skinned black guy with, you know, practically red hair." And he said, "That's not him." And I guess there had been a break-in. Some guy had robbed a gas station about a block away, block and a half away from my store. And the police officer assumed I'm black, I must be him, because there's not that many black people in town, and didn't know me, and, you know, was about to shoot me over this deal. And so those are the type of incidents where, you know, they all turn out in the end. And what's amazing on these things, you don't get apologies. You don't get anybody going, "I'm sorry for what we did," or whatever.
Right.
It's just like, nothing ever comes of it, and you have to be thankful you're alive.
Well, here's the thing. They don't always come out in the end. I mean, there have been too many incidences lately, and this is why we're talking about it, this this campaign, is, you know, where people are, you know, are pulled over, mistaken identity is made, and people wind up dying.
Yes.
This has happened several times this year.
Well, I think one of the things that concerns me is every time you see an incident, at least, I mean, I think there was one here recently where the young child was shot, and mm-hmm. his dad was in an incident. But I was shocked when they weren't black. It seems like, you know, the vast majority of these incidents are black individuals who are being, you know, shot or killed. And I don't know where the disconnect is, but it is amazing that it's okay just to shoot people just about for any reason, or beat them up or whatever it is. So, I mean, there are so many different things going on in our society today that I don't feel personally like it's any better than it ever was. Matter of fact, I think it's worse than it's ever been.
This is another reason why we bring this up, is because I've had conversations with several people saying, "Well, racism is finally over." And I was like, "What makes you say that?" He said, "Well, we got a black president, and, you know, there's no overt racism." I said, "Well, I'll tell you what." You know, it's alive and well and kicking. It may have morphed into a different, more subtle form, but it is still there. I mean, and here's the thing. This is the thing that I want to bring up, and this is one thing that I brought up about white privilege, is there's an interesting thing. If, you know, we have two boys, and you know them quite well. You watch them grow up. And, you know, if we were black, we would have instructed them at a very young age how to interact with the police. If
yep.
you yeah, you know, always make sure your hands are visible, no sudden moves, be very respectful. You know, I've never had that conversation with our boys because they're born white, but this is a real thing that you have to do if you are black.
Well, it's really true, and I think what's interesting about what you just said there, probably about 5 years ago, we had a good friend of our son come and stay with us, he was really, really, really dark black, and a big guy. He's probably about 6'2", and a great kid, going to Scott College, doing a lot of things. And we went out to a mall to go shopping one day, and he had a ton of money to spend, and he wanted to go get these fancy at a mall in San Francisco, and we're not talking about in Georgia. And I was amazed to watch how people watch this guy like Satan had walked into the building. And I was thinking, wow, just on pure, you know, looks alone, they're making assumptions about this kid. And I thought, you know, it's not something I don't go through it that severely. I mean, it's not that severe. There are times, yes, it's that severe. But it was amazing just because the tone of the kid's skin is darker. So I'm thinking, wow, it really hit me how real it was. And this was recent, you know, the last 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
So I you look at this stuff and you think, and then you're also in San Francisco. This is a liberal, you know, accepting
community,
you know, area.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you look at these things and you think, wow, this really is real. This is not projection. This is not an idea. This is reality. And people jump to quite a few conclusions by pure looks and never ever talking to you, never ever having a conversation with you. And they make a lot of assumptions. And that, I think that's one of the most dangerous elements about all the things going on. And with those assumptions come all the biases and all the issues and all the problems that come along with it. So that's the problem. I mean, one of the problems I see. And it's also promoted by the fact that when you watch, you know, watch television nowadays and media and all that sort of thing, you know, the person with the most amount of drama, no matter whether it's good drama or bad drama, is the one that gets all the attention. So, unfortunately, people don't sit down and dig a little bit deeper into issues to find out what's going on. And I also think it's, you know, it's easy to kind of fall into a tribe, say, this is my group, you know, that's easy. To have to discover what the other guy is about, it's a little bit more work, and I think that's another part of the equation.
Absolutely, and I mean, you grew up in the '60s, and we, you know, there was a lot of social change going on, and I think a lot of us assumed by now that things would have evolved much more than they have. And it's not to say that there has not been evolution; there really has, but you know, it's the unfortunate thing is the biases, you know, are still there. Well, one thing that we mentioned during our panel last week is a study that was done recently. Several studies were done very recently with, you know, with job applicants where they had equally qualified job applicants. One had what sounded like an ethnic name. One sounded like a white name. And, you know, by far, there was a huge bias towards the white-sounding candidates. Even though they were equal, so the biases are still there, and a lot of people, although they feel, oh yeah, there's no bias, there is. It's still really there, and I think we have to actually be aware of it, and and that's why we're talking about this, because you know a lot of people think, well, it's really not there. Things have changed. We have a black president, for God's sake.
Yeah, exactly, and then there's other elements to it. I mean, this thing gets really complicated in the fact that you have all these elements that are really, really complex about it, and that is that you have a black society that is also bought into some stereotypes, which also don't make it any better. I mean, there are elements that go on in black society where there's a prejudice also on the other side. So it goes both ways. This pendulum doesn't swing in just one direction, and when you combine them both, then you have something that's really troubling, because at some point you have to come to some sort of center and some sort of agreeable position. position. I think in the 60s, we probably came to as close to that position as possible. But through that period of time, we swung out of kind of alignment, and it's gotten worse and worse and worse. So you have blacks who are living in strictly highly black dense areas who have come to a certain group of conclusions. You have whites who've lived in exclusively white areas who've come to conclusions, and you have no communication between the two at all. And what happens at the end of the day is everybody goes to their tribe. That's where they feel safe. That's where they're going to get the best bang for their buck, and that's where they go. And unfortunately, you know, you don't have a meeting of the minds. One of the things that I'll throw this out, and let me know if it's okay to continue talking.
Please, yes.
The other element of this is that if you ever notice, when you look at college, people in college going to school,
sure.
You'll notice the incredible diversity of friends they have. Blacks, whites, Latinos, everybody's mixed in great.
Sure.
You see that same group at 50, 60 years old that's completely broken back into their tribes. I mean, I look at all the people I was hanging out with when I was in high school. And those people, I guarantee, I mean, have all been tribalized, quote unquote, and they've all went, you know, now I live in an exclusively white area. And yeah, I had a lot of black friends when I was in college and, you know, and Latino friends or whatever. But now I live in this all white area, or I'm black and I live in an exclusively all black area. And I think very few people end up in that kind of middle kind of mix. And I think without that, it's really a problem to bring people together, because it's all about communication. And when the communications breaks down, then you're in trouble. And I think that's what's happening. I mean, I think that's part of what's happening, at least.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And one thing that you're kind of uniquely qualified to talk about is, and you kind of mentioned it just a little while ago with your friend you took to the mall, is
sure.
That being that you are, quote-unquote, a light-skinned black,
Right.
Is that, and your last name is Ferguson, could be white.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it's,
yeah, what a coincidence.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you know, it's, you know, you have probably been on both sides of the fence. You have lived a little bit of white privilege and not.
Yeah.
And then been.
Exactly. I mean, that is very true. The other part of that equation, it's funny we talk about this subject because this brings up a whole other
sure.
list of good. And that is because I was articulate and because I didn't speak, you know, black slang, or, you know, I didn't talk like your average black, I was able to do radio,
mm-hmm.
Which was another part of that equation, because, oh, wow, you sound so white. So that's another element of it that, once again, with conversation, people come to a conclusion about who a person is. And yes, being a light-skinned black has offered me more privilege. There's no doubt about it. There is no doubt about it. So it's all those elements play into this whole paradigm of how people interact together. And yeah, I've seen it because I have lived on both sides of the fence, to be honest with you. I've lived on both sides.
Yeah.
And I've seen it, and it's amazing. I mean, I'm shocked by the things. I'm still shocked as though I were 19 years old, and I'm just a little older than that. But you know, I am still shocked by what I see.
And here's the other thing that we talked a little bit about, but it's an interesting thing: is what is considered white and what is considered black. I mean, to be white, you have to pretty much be almost 100% white. I mean, like if you look at the
yes.
if you look at the president, he's half white.
Yeah, no, but you'd never know it by the way they treat him. Anyway, I mean, you know, he's a black guy. Oh, there's nothing, you know. But,
right.
But that's part of it. It's, you know, part of this perception that, and what's amazing is there's more mixed people today, and there will continue to be more because of the crossover. So, I think, you know, once again, it comes back to this element, too, of we're afraid of what we don't know, you know, so... I don't know that many blacks, and every time I see something on TV, they're doing this, they're doing that, and blacks will say the same thing about whites. Every time I see them, they're doing something that's especially that, and they don't know that many blacks, I mean, or that many whites, to sit down and communicate with. So, you draw to the instant and logical and easy conclusions. I mean, I was talking this morning with my wife on some things business-wise, you know, and I said one of the reasons they do things that way because it's easier, it doesn't take as much work, and no, it's not as effective. And I think that what we're talking about here is going to take a lot of work, and it's going to take a lot of consideration of a lot of things, and that's something people don't take time to do unless they're forced to. And that's the problem. And I think that when we finally start working on it, like what you're doing here, I think this forum is powerful. I think people need to be able to talk about it more. We need to get other points of view. You know, there's someone who's got, you know, another point of view from mine, but I want to hear it.
Right.
I don't want to shut that off. I want to hear what they've got to say and be able to listen to those points of view to get a better understanding and a better kind of empathy for what's going on the other side of the fence from even from me.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a lot of it. And I'm always, for me, I guess, I've always been a curious guy. I'm always interested in different things, especially if I don't know anything about it, then I really get interested. So, and I'm also very nosy, so that's always a nice trait. But I just think as a society, I think the more we're willing to sit down, talk about it, work through it, listen to the other guy's story, listen to their point of view, no matter how obscure or obnoxious it may be to us, and to be able to see, wow, I guess that is another way of looking at it, really helps to open the door to the next step, which is, you know, to open up the communication.
And one thing I do have hope for is that there does seem to be lessening of built-in racism and stereotyping as with the younger generations. It does seem to be lessening more and more with each generation. And as I said, when we were young in the 60s, it was, a lot of us were on this, in this camp. But what it turned out to be, and I was very disappointed to find out this, is that a lot of this thinking was, for a lot of people, was just fashion of the day.
Yes.
And a lot of people of my generation just went to, whatever the fashion was when it swapped. And, and it was very, very disappointing, as I thought our generation really felt this way, but not all did. And yes, some did.
I agree with you 100%, and I think that's one of the things that shocks me, is when I see some of the things our generation is doing, I'm shocked.
It is shocking and disappointing.
It's very disappointing, because I thought for sure we'd be the enlightened generation,
right,
the 60s generation, to bring some enlightenment and clarity to some of this stuff, and we've been about as dark as I've ever seen.
But,
I've been shocked by what I've seen.
But I do have hope for the future. We do seem to have, the younger generation does seem to be a little bit more truly colorblind, not just fashion, but in reality. And that fills me with some hope.
Yeah, and hopefully that is true, because like I was saying earlier in my description, when we were all in college and a little bit younger,
right,
as time goes on, I ended up moving into this all-white neighborhood. There's no blacks, no anything. And God, it's just there's no problems here. There's no issues here. I'm going to draw the conclusion that, it must be all those blacks and the minorities that made this difficult. Vice versa, I went to an all-black community, and that's where my family settles down. I feel very comfortable. And we don't have to deal with all the issues of dealing with whites, quote-unquote, blah, blah, blah. So you get these kind of, those type things happen later. Hopefully, like you said, this younger generation will see past that, because there is so much you miss in doing, in not having that open idea or that open communication. I mean, your life is richer for it. Our relationship's one of those.
Absolutely.
I mean, your kids are welcome to come stay with me anytime, vice versa. It's been like that all of our lives.
Yep.
So it's like, that's a powerful thing. One of the rich elements of my life. And could you imagine, just because of some color of somebody's skin, I wouldn't associate with them. So
yeah, well, let us hope that this, as I said, the younger generation is showing signs of hope, but of course ours did as well. So
absolutely.
Time will tell.
Absolutely.
Time will tell. And I know you and I have dealt with this topic for a long time.
Oh,
and,
God.
And mostly with humor. It's like when we came down to the Bay Area and we bought Amy's new Honda Fit, and we were driving around, and once it gets up to 9 miles an hour, the doors lock, and we were joking about it's a new feature when you're driving in a black neighborhood, the doors automatically lock. We laugh because we
understand that there's humor and pain too, and you have to work through it, and because we also understand each other really well, we've been through just about everything known to man as two close friends, and it makes a difference, and it's almost a textbook example of opening the door to, more parameters in your life enriches your life so much.
Absolutely. Well, Sam, unfortunately, we are out of time. It has gone very fast.
All right. We're
good at talking.
You and me could travel across the country. You probably never stop.
That is so true. Anyway, this conversation you will find archived at khum.com. Just click on the Stop the Violence page, and you will hear all the interviews we have done thus far. They've been just fantastic. And tomorrow, I am going to be talking with, and I hope I can get his name somewhat correct in the pronunciation, Dr. Cesar Abrica. Hope I'm even close. He is a professor of social work at Humboldt State University, and we'll be talking with him tomorrow morning at 9.